Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Migration and Diaspora Podcast with me, your co-host, Aurore. Today, we are joined by Fridan Tarangwi, founder and managing director at ZD Circle, to tell us all about African diaspora startup funding. But first, a little bit about Frida. Frida founded the first ever diaspora entrepreneurship incubator out of the Netherlands, ZD Circle, supporting the diaspora and migrants' entrepreneurship training, mentorship, matchmaking, and access to investment to succeed as entrepreneurs both in their home countries and countries of residence. Through her leadership, ZD Circle has collectively graduated hundreds of diaspora entrepreneurs and impacted many households both in Europe and Africa. She has also managed several diaspora entrepreneurship programs, including the IOM's Connecting Diaspora for Development, CD4D, the SNV's Green Diaspora Venture Backers Program, and Green Diaspora SME Matching Program, the Diaspora SME Forum, and launched investment products like the Diaspora Venture Backers Programs that train aspiring diaspora investors on how to invest in startups and SME in host and home countries. Frida was awarded by the EON Project of the European Union for promoting inclusive entrepreneurship in the EU and was bestowed the Duesenberg title, Woman in Finance. The Amsterdam's Municipality Initiative Startup Amsterdam and the Silicon Canals recently listed Frida as a top female entrepreneur in the Netherlands to watch in 2022. Frida is passionate about building an inclusive entrepreneurship and financing ecosystem for migrants, developing economies, and women entrepreneurs. Frida holds a Bachelor of Commerce degree from the Catholic University of Eastern Africa and a Master's of Science in Finance from the Duesenberg School of Finance and in the Netherlands. I hope you enjoy today's episode. I'm joined today with Frida, founder and CEO of ZD Circle, to discuss all things related to African diaspora entrepreneurship. Welcome, Frida.
Thank you very much for having me.
Before we dive right deep in, something that we like to do at the Migration and Diaspora Podcast is first to get a sense of our guest's migration and diaspora story. So could you please tell us your own migration and diaspora story, please?
Thank you very much, and very excited to be here and to talk about diaspora, because recently in Africa, diaspora has been now recognized as a country on its own. So it's very nice that we're having this conversation. So in 2014, I migrated from Kenya to the Netherlands, where I did a master's in finance and specialized in financial markets. Then I worked for a while, and I was very lucky to work for an asset manager, one of the biggest pension funds in the Netherlands, which complemented my prior experience in less risky government securities like treasury bills and bonds that I earned while working for the Central Bank of Kenya. So I later moved to a financial consultancy firm that was a spin-off of through a management buyout from the ING Bank in the Netherlands. The firm was focused on financial advisory to banks in emerging markets. And I was very lucky to spearhead the African market strategy, where we were involved in structuring banks and product development. I was involved in a very exciting project funded by the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs that was helping banks in East Africa develop agriculture lending as a product. That's how I came at a very close range with small and medium enterprises in Africa and all the challenges that they were going through. I later started my own investment advisory firm to help these SMEs in Africa access funding from international investors. So suddenly I was an entrepreneur. Even with the Netherlands being ranked as one of the best countries with ease of doing business in the world, I still faced various challenges as the support structure was not there. Apart from my business coach that I hired, there were no role models, those that look like me, or peers to talk to. I tried joining local business incubators that I always felt out of place. Fundraising was a very upfront task with similar challenges. I got very much involved in African diaspora organizations in the Netherlands and carried out my own research to find out why a vibrant diaspora entrepreneurship ecosystem was lacking. Some of it was, there was an untold culture of warm introductions that locks out in diaspora migrants arriving from outside the European Union from accessing entrepreneurship ecosystem. There was an ethnic minority that is very hugely underrepresented in both founder circles and investor circles, thus lacking role models for inspiration. And also diaspora were categorized, or at least what I gathered, as very risky, both in their country of origin and host countries. And of course, that's missing out on funding opportunities. And of course, there was no diaspora-focused or migrant-focused diaspora or entrepreneurship or funding programs front-end by diaspora themselves, because I believe it's a very big way that they should at least fund each other, mentor each other, train each other. And that's how ZDSAC was born, to create an inclusive entrepreneurship and funding ecosystem for the diaspora in African startups or SMEs by providing training, boot camps, mentorship, matchmaking, and access finding. We sure have been able to achieve this through an inclusive ecosystem of entrepreneurs, experts, and investors. Our mission is also to act as a catalyst to diaspora-driven development in the African continent, of course, by large in the countries of residence where they are, because we feel like they are variable economic catalysts. So we have been able to create this through various programs. One is entrepreneurship programs, where we equip global diaspora and African SMEs with the necessary business and investor skills to be able to successfully launch businesses in their countries of origin or internationally. Also including mentorship and matchmaking is part of this program. So it's divided in different aspects. And also we have investor programs where we launch Venture Backers Program, which is basically training aspiring angel investors, diaspora, but also country-specific angel investors in the African continent on how to start functioning as angel investors who invests either individually or collectively, thus minimizing the risks. And then, of course, we have an investment vehicle called the ZDSAC Co-Hope, which is a member-driven special purpose investment vehicle that is initiated by an organized group of diaspora individuals from our own Venture Backers Program and other internationals, entrepreneurs, and like-minded international angel investors. Now, members of the co-op are individuals who want to reduce the knowledge gap, resources or funding gap for startups and small and medium businesses in Africa, in African entrepreneurs. And of course, the group is driven by a positive impact and wanting to change the environment. So yeah, I think that's a bit of an introduction, deep. Mm-hmm. But I think, that's it about ZDSAC and why I founded it.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I mean, you've said it yourself, you were an entrepreneur. And I think, your story sort of has led you to also then be in a position where you yourself can then support other African diaspora entrepreneurs, which is quite inspiring. And you've also mentioned some of the challenges that you were looking to solve with the venture. And in today's episode, I actually wanted to discuss a topic that's been given a lot of attention lately, and that is African startup funding. I mean, you've mentioned yourself, you do have financial support to your entrepreneurs in some sense, so we'll discuss that a bit later. But for those listening today, if you've been following closely in the African entrepreneur space, especially tech entrepreneurship space, then you would know that venture capital funding to African startup have reached record levels in 2021, with close to $5 billion going to African startups. And that's more than a twofold increase from what was reported the year before. So around the range of $1.3 billion to $1.5 billion. Now, this is an exciting time, though we are also hearing that VC funding is decreasing. So we'll see if this trend maintained itself through 2022 and the coming years. But I'm saying this because the news came as this exciting news, given how overlooked African entrepreneurs, and I would also want to get African diaspora entrepreneurs, have been overlooked and also seen investors being risk averse towards investing in their businesses. So Frida, maybe if I can ask you, you've mentioned some of the challenges. Can you sort of touch on why historically have investors been risk averse to funding African or African diaspora startups?
Thank you. Obviously, there are various lessons, and some of it is the issue of knowing the market. People appreciate where they know, where they are, where they know well. If you've never been in Africa, you know, chances are that you have little know-how of the market. And we've seen, you know, the trend of sometimes investors tend to invest in markets that they know best and they feel comfortable investing in. Of course, it's also the prejudice I mentioned before. People, the mention of the word Africa, people feel, no, that's a no-go zone. I know in 2014, for example, when we started in 2015, post-crisis, I think everybody was trying to save their markets. And so Africa was the risk considered markets at that time. But the ecosystem is growing and we can now observe some trends which were not there. You know, there's also a lot of positive awareness. I'm sure I've heard you also mention the new trend. And sometimes developing products for Africa as a market or as a startup startup, what a typical investor understands. I like the way technology has changed our universe, but investors should not overly rely on it. It should be a medium of making what we do better and not the only product that can be rigid in front of investors. Of course, people look at the unicorns and everybody expected that. Of course, technology companies in Africa have also been able to attract a lot of funding, but that's not the only way. For me, technology is a means. It's not the only way. I know in our startup programs, we tell them a robust business, an innovative business, a sustainable business needs to have some form of aspect in terms of technology, but there are also other inventions happening there that, of course, investors to ignore. And that's why I've been happening for the African diaspora and African continent to create generational wealth through active participation in investment opportunities. And this is also the basis for our Venture Backers program. G, African diaspora understands Africa. And of course, Africans themselves understand Africa. And population is huge. There's a huge capital resource. But I think that what is missing is the knowledge. We can apply this capital, actually.
Exactly. And I mean, you've touched on, sort of the historical reasons why investors have also been risk averse to African entrepreneurs, but also one being that perhaps the location of these investors have tended to also be outside of Africa, predominantly in the West. And you've mentioned programs that you have, namely, I think you said an angel investor program where you're building this knowledge within African diaspora, entrepreneurs and individuals as well that might not be entrepreneurs, but that would want to become investors. So can you also touch on this? I mean, you've talked about the need to increase participation in investment opportunities, financial wealth, and it's something that I've also realized through my research looking at diaspora bonds, why they were not successful. And something that I found is that there is significant gaps into financial literacy in our communities, which also prevents people from becoming investors. So I'd be really curious to hear more about angel investor program that you have and sort of how it works, sort of the challenges that you probably have faced through launching it, but also some of positive impact that it's already starting to have. If you can touch on that, please.
Yes. So one of the things that we've seen is that a lot of programs are coming up and people are now aware of the program. They know they need to create programs and products that solve the issue. And one of the things that guided us about developing this Venture Backers program, we realized diaspora, not just diaspora, but even in the African continent by far, people are used to doing other forms of investment. They invest in real estate, probably they invest in interest-free bonds from the government or treasury bills, they invest in stock, but they have not really embraced investing in other startups or in ventures. Okay. This for a long time I've been just been left to venture capitalists. So we developed this Venture Backers program, one, to create the awareness. If you want to transform these remittances into investments, one of the things that diaspora would ask is, then how do I start doing it? How do I understand my risk? How do I do diligence when I'm far away? How do I even make the actual investment? This is actually what we do, you know, during the Venture Backers program, which is purely training the angel investors on how to start investing. So we also realize that once these angel investors are trained, they know what to do. We take them through 8 weeks modules. They even know how to value these startups. They even know how to make this the documentation. They know even how to monitor the business. But then once they have this knowledge, how do they start investing? And we created a diaspora investment vehicle out of the Netherlands. And it's basically, it wasn't just, of course, ZDSAP wanted to initiate it, but we had to approach various players within the diaspora communities. So it was initiated by an organized group of diaspora individuals from our Venture Backers program and other professional entrepreneurs and like-minded international angel investors who, of course, have the same desire as us to reduce the funding gap in startups. And I'm very excited because we have also now different groups within Africa. So we have a program for Kenya, we have a program for Ghana, and we have a general program where anybody actually from the world, whether diaspora or not, whether African or not, can join this program. So it's unique in the sense that it's controlled by the members themselves through a board of directors. The investors decide on the investments that they want to make, either from our own incubation programs or from partner incubation programs. Like in Ghana, we partnered with SNB in Ghana that is running the Green Project that is co-funded by the European Union to help green startups within Ghana. They working together with a network of hubs and incubators in Ghana. a lot of businesses, green businesses, both by youth and women, have been formed in these regions. And so we already have a very good pool of startups that can be funded. So how the COP works, which we call, you know, Zidi Circle COP, is that it invests. So the angel investors, diaspora angel investors, or African angel investors, aggregate their investments. So they put them together. The minimum investments is 1,000 euros. So everybody joins with 1,000 euros, but say a company needs 50,000 euros, then those are brought together. Different investments from different individuals are brought together and aggregated in this investment vehicle. And this investment vehicle then invests in a startup. And it's sort of like in a layman's language, it's taking all our investment interest and presenting them in one startup. And this helps. You can imagine if the startup was onboarding 15 investors, even its cap table would be totally messed up, right? So that's why we use this investment vehicle to invest there. But the venture backers make their own decision without us making the decision for them. Of course, we provide capacity, we guide on good principles, they do their own due diligence. Of course, we facilitate this and background checks, and then eventually now the cooperative through the board invest in these businesses. So in a nutshell, that's how it works.
Amazing. Which leads me, I guess, to my next point, which is touching on the remittances argument, right? I mean, there are a lot of talks about diaspora saving capital. I think the latest estimate in terms of saving within the African diaspora were up to 33.7 billion and remittances flow to Africa, about 86 billion reported in 2018. And formal remittances, if we're looking at informal channels and in-kind, we're looking at 200 billion that's being estimated. I mean, we've heard the arguments about how this funding could be pooled, how it could impact significantly development on the continent in a positive way. But we also hear multiple stories of struggling diaspora entrepreneurs who are not able to access funding. So there's sort of a dichotomy and also a myth about diaspora funding from where I stand. So in your opinion, I mean, you first mentioned this aggregate pool of funding that you have started at Zidi Circle, which I think for me seems to be a very innovative and effective way as well of pooling diaspora resources for startup funding. Can you maybe touch on why do you think we haven't seen more of those effective ways of pooling diaspora resources, either for development or diaspora entrepreneurship? I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing sort of a vehicle like yours, which is quite exciting, but maybe can you touch on some of the challenges you've had in sort of setting that up, and maybe in your opinion, sort of what are the common myths that exist within the diaspora investment space?
Yeah, definitely. So remittances are still consumption based, you know, by large. Right, and the switch of mindset needs a lot of education for both governments, development organizations and diasporas, because everybody needs this amount of diaspora remittances, you know, coming to countries. Sometimes I feel like even governments expect that there's money out there that this diaspora are just sending. But if you look at it closely, most of it goes on in some food. So you send your relatives some money for your food. Sometimes you send school fees. It's by a large consumption, home, you know, domestic for families rather than investment. So one of the biggest challenges has been having a way to mobilize and channel these remittances to other economic activities by the diaspora. And because the issue of SME funding in Africa has been the alternative, source of funding is still an issue. And the same question you're asking, why aren't we really diverting it? So I think there are a lot of challenges, if I may, and one of them is the lack of infrastructure for the diaspora venture investments. It's been lacking. There's been lack of trust. I know there are a lot of diaspora organizations that tried actually to aggregate and come together and do this, but there was no clear infrastructure that was there. There's also the risk that this money is not going to come back to us if we invest. The same mindset that is in international investors' mind, actually some diaspora are also like that. This is oppressed, it's not going to come back. The other issue is lack of support by the government as well, because everybody wants this money to come. But of course, I know it's not up to the government to create private investment vehicles and organize all this, but they can create a very enabling environment for this to happen. And I'm very happy that in Ghana, the government of Ghana was able to really give us a warm reception at the investment commission. They were able to make our life smooth in terms of investing in Ghana as a diaspora group. But also there's another issue, the development organizations, and you know, I would like to call them out because a lot of them are not seeing or they're not participating. Of course, they have a lot of money to spend in other development programs, but of course they have not focused on developing angel investing programs or diaspora investment programs. And most of it actually even developing them, helping bringing capacity into the infrastructure itself, but also in terms of knowledge and education. That has not been happening. And I really want to upround the SNV. SNV is a Netherlands development organization that was able to partner with us to make this program possible. At least to they helped us in terms of building capacity, and a lot of, because of that, a lot of diaspora investors are aware of this opportunity and they are participating in the first on the training program, but also during the co-op as investment groups. So, and of course, the co-op that we've been able to come up with as an investment vehicle, we think this is a big asset when it comes to mobilizing these diaspora investments across the world. And I think it's important to say that we created the structure in a very good way. And we put a lot into it, actually, a lot of time, because individuals are able to join from anywhere. There are individuals from across the globe, but also even Africans, they can join from anywhere, diaspora group. So you can organize your own diaspora group and come and join. And because it's not, like I said, it's not owned by Zindisaco. It's controlled by a board of directors and answerable to all the members who invest in it. You can join as organizations as well, even private organizations or professionals or entrepreneurs. So the infrastructure is there. And I hope, you know, we need to see more and more of this kind of vehicles of new way of doing things, if I may. Thank you.
No, totally. I agree. And I mean, it's good that it's been used directly by the diaspora. And you're right. I think development partners can do so much more in the space. Actually, the African Union last month just endorsed the African Diaspora Finance Corporation, which is meant to be sort of a continental finance institution, which would support, you know, channeling funds from the diaspora on the continent. So hopefully more things will emerge in this space, and knowing that it's also being supported by the African Union and perhaps other developmental partners will also sort of join into this initiative. So interesting trends. I think there are things that are moving, but it's also good to see it directly coming from entrepreneurs themselves, just like with Zidi. And we can only hope for more of these initiatives to sort of come to the surface in the coming days. I've also seen a few startups as well, tech startup, of course, that are also trying to tackle the issue of diaspora financing to African startups. So let's see where this goes. I think that the year of 2022 for me seems like the year of diaspora finance and African invest. There's so much going on. So let's see what comes out of this. Now, I wanted to perhaps touch on the way we see African startups, one state sort of start raising funding. Now, I've recently seen an article that got a lot of attention following the increased valuation of African tech startups, more specifically, that has claimed that startups on the continent were being overvalued. And I think that was more to respect to tech startups who've gathered a lot of attention. Now, the rapid growth of the African startup ecosystem has led to a lot of speculation following several high-profile rounds that have led to some raised eyebrows by some people and also warnings of inflated valuation, with the most prominent case being that of Africa's unicorn, Flutterwave, which I think many people knew and know that's made headlines for successful raises of $250 million in Series D, which basically meant that they were valued at over $3 billion. Now, some have argued against the claim that African tech startups, more specifically, were being overvalued, saying that African startups are not being overvalued, as many of them have effectively created new markets, right? Sort of justifying their valuation. And consequently, they are creating new revenue pools beyond what the current market indicates. So what is your take on this? Do you think there is also bias in how we perceive the valuation of African startups and how much they're able they're able to generate in the market? So what's your take on this?
Interesting perspective, because if the same kind of company like Flutterwave is being founded in Silicon Valley and land and gets valuation of tens of billions, why not? You know, why wouldn't an African startup have such value? Exactly. So I think, of course, valuation is a very thorny issue. especially because a lot of it depends on you know, historical data, similar companies, benchmarking. I think the question is, and why I understand where this question is coming from, because in Africa, of course, variation is a bit difficult, especially when certain industries have not matured in that sense, in terms of startups having seen trade, having seen historical data, having seen other how other businesses have been valued. So that challenge is there. But you cannot say that because it's an African startup that is massively growing, it's a tech company or fintech solving major world problem, cannot be valued well. So I think the fact that they raised $250 million, it seems the world is for them to conquer. And that's the misconception that I keep saying about Africa. We too can produce unicorns. Yeah. So, of course, what about Twitter? Let's first talk about Twitter, the valuation of Twitter, and then we can keep having this conversation, you know, about valuation. But still, I think in our programs also for investors, of course, it's a bit of a challenge, especially when you do not have a benchmark. But we are growing and we are getting there. And trust me, in the next 5-10 years, there will be lot of good examples, and then 3 billion valuation will be justifiable.
Thank you. I think in relation to that and sort of the knowledge that's required as well for entrepreneurs, but also African investors or inspiring investors, I wanted to touch on something that I've heard. I've heard somewhere that entrepreneurs typically would need 3 main things to survive. So the first one being knowledge of how to run a business, of course, entrepreneurship skills, but also knowledge of their markets, their products, but also they would need strong networks, which I think is obvious, and access to sufficient capital. Now, that seems to be sort of the main 3 core things that entrepreneurs need to survive. Do you agree with this, especially with respect to diaspora investors? How different are they in terms of their needs with respect to other investors, perhaps? And also, what is commonly missing in our communities and diaspora entrepreneurs? So do they often come with the knowledge, but not the network, with the capital, but not with the knowledge? So what has been some of the things that you've seen? And also, what are their strengths, right? Do they come with a lot of knowledge of their products and their market, but perhaps they don't have the capital? And also, is there something that's missing that you think that it's also key for them to have? And how does Ziti Circle contribute to it? From my understanding, I think you touch on all 3 of these key things, which I think is amazing. But yeah, I just would like to hear your take on this.
Okay, definitely. And I agree, you cannot do with one or the other. If you have a great idea, you also need to develop it. You need to consider your market, your customers. You need the resources to execute it. You need partners to do that. You need to market the idea. You need to look at your cost structure and your revenue structures and see if you can be able to break even. You need to do a good market research. You need to design a very innovative product, you know, for you to survive the test of time. Because sometimes I feel like people wake up and say, well, I have this idea and then I have money and then let me start a business. But that's not how it works. You have to find your target market. You have to give your customers what they want. So of course, you need all these things to survive. And in fact, that's why our mission has been to help entrepreneurs achieve just this. But of course, as a migrant, if you leave your country of origin, you leave all your networks and banking history behind, right? Mm-hmm. When you are in a new country, you start building accounts from scratch. And then what happens when you want to start a business? You then take too long to trying to fix a problem, try to fit in existing networks, building credibility for funding your business. And then comes all sorts of prejudices and barriers that frustrate your fundraising further. The issues I mentioned earlier. So I have noticed that most diaspora entrepreneurs have the right motivation and ample knowledge and experience and perhaps even sometimes a little capital. And I think the problem is when they are creating the business itself. You know, most of them have an innate push to improve the social and economic development of their own countries and choose to create their businesses in the continent. This is where the problem starts, because most founders believe they are solving a problem, which unfortunately their target market don't know they have, or they actually do not look at the other side, the customer. So the entrepreneurs are forced to go back to the drawing board. Of course, some also think they can do business remotely, which is possible, but you have to be on the ground to do your research, to set up, to have a good team. because team is everything in terms of there's a continual idea. So I think that's why actually this is also the genesis of why we brought this kind of program. I'm very happy that most of the diaspora have been able to uptake it. But I think there are still the others that think because you are professional, you're an entrepreneur. And that's not the case. And here comes the word hustler. Everybody saying, I am trying to hustle to get a business. But you have to get first things right first. Get help. And there's a lot of help out there.
Not just, of course, within ZD Circle, you know. Get the right help to create a very
sustainable and innovative business model. And of course, a product that your customer will fall in love with. And if you get all these things right, I'm certain even the funding will not be a problem at all.
No, I think that's definitely, yeah, I also see that the mismatch between sometimes an amazing solution, a very solution, but then you have no market, you have no one to sort of embrace it and uptake it, and then you're not able to sort of scale up and move forward with this amazing idea because no one is ready to embrace it. So I think that's a really good piece of advice. I think before we close, I wanted to hear about perhaps any upcoming events or programs that you'll be offering, or maybe if you can tell us sort of the schedule that you have for this venture backing programs. When can people join? Is it every 6 months? Sort of what is the setup for these programs that you have, and when is the good time for people to join?
So for the entrepreneur programs, we have different types, actually, depending also when you want to join. We have different modules. We have self-paced. Sometimes you can do it from anywhere, wherever you are, at your own pace, and still be able to complete it. That is one category. But we also have two major programs in the year, where we have a full boot camp that you take through 2 weeks, 2 months, sorry, in the spring and in autumn. Of course, you attend class every Wednesday, every Tuesday. It's usually in the evenings. And the beauty about it is that you have also monthly meetups with people in your area. So our programs are majorly virtual, but we've been able to create a lot of networks with existing apps, so that certain entrepreneurs can meet when they need to meet, to even the personal interaction, to network and whatnot. So those programs are twice per year, but also we have need specific modules where probably your program is just about getting investors. If everything else is fine and you need to get investor ready. So we have that program also that also comes quarterly, and you can also do it either in classroom together with the others, or you can do it on your own. We also have a mentorship program that we want actually the diaspora to, not just to commit, actually other professionals, not just in the diaspora. We have a mentorship program where they can actually come. If you do not have time to run your own business, you can participate in a business of your choice, not just financially, but also we have a mentorship program where you can mentor that particular startup with your industry knowledge. We also have a matchmaking program that we do quarterly as well. And we invite African entrepreneurs, diaspora entrepreneurs, and other diaspora Africans in a network and international people as well, where you can find a startup, you can know what's happening, the ecosystem, and you can find each other and develop. So we also have workshops in that sense, in terms of enabling entrepreneurs. Every month, our network of members, you know, can attend, but also other like-minded individuals can attend these workshops, or usually for free, by the way, that tackle different items. I know last month that they tackled partnerships, building partnerships and looking for co-founders. The other month, they were looking at sales funnels, and we had even a resource from AppSpot to tell them how they can do this. And this month, I know on 26th of May, that there's a legal workshop in terms of all the legal formats and structures that you need to have as a startup. So on the website, of course, all these programs are there. But in terms of the investors, the diaspora investors, international investors, and also investors in the African continent who want to join our program, we have two categories of these programs. One, we have the ongoing Green Venture Backers program, which is the theme is green. So you join as an aspiring angel investor, you get trained on how to invest in green businesses. This is the partnership we have with SNV. And the current cohort is already going on. It started in April, and the next cohort is going on in September. So we have two programs that, you know, you can come physically. But that said, there's another category also of diaspora and professionals who do not have a lot of time to attend the weekly meetups in the evening for this capacity building. So we have an online learning platform. They go there, they follow it. Every 2 weeks, they meet virtually as well, just to ask questions with the resource people and experienced venture investors. And then they actually complete the program on their own. And as soon as you complete the program, you are able to start investing, because we believe you really need to understand what you're getting into. We don't make your decisions. You make your own investment decisions. Also, we have the general category. The green one is purely based on Ghana, even though by and large, really we like bedding towards green so much. But we have a general category, and this is also where our general entrepreneurs can pitch to you as an angel investor. So you can sign up on our website. You can do it at your own pace. You can have monthly meetups, and then you can be onboarded to become an angel investor. So we have a very robust program that includes everybody. So you have no excuse exactly. that you have no time to attend the class. And like the investor program is free. It's free. So
oh, that's
so,
amazing. That's what I was going to say. You have something for everyone and different times, different moments. There's no excuse to not join. Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Frida, for this super interesting conversation. Thank you again for your time, for joining us. I'm sure people that are listening in today will have appreciated this as much as I have. So thanks again.
You're welcome. Of course, people can find us. You can visit our website, zidisaku.com, to learn about us, to sign up for exciting events, but also to be on our network as a member, because we have membership as well. You can also follow us on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at ZDCircle, where we keep you up to date with the latest entrepreneurship and financing information and trends, both in the diaspora and in the African continent.
Amazing. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sure to link all of this. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Migration and Diaspora podcast, powered by Homelands Advisory, your independent migration and diaspora agency. If you've enjoyed the show and would like to support our channel, please feel free to share it or leave a review via your preferred podcasting platform. You can access the channel's full archive and show notes by visiting homelandsadvisory.com/podcast, where you can also get in touch if you'd like to be on the show. Thank you again, and see you next time.